Hi, folks, and welcome to another episode of the Wildlife for You podcast. I'm your host, Stephanie Payne, and I'm joined here by my longtime friend and partner in crime, Daryl Ratajak.
Oh, so I'm a partner in crime now, eh?
Yeah, I figured it would be a fitting introduction because today we're going to be talking about the Masked Bandit.
Ooh, the masked bandit. We got to be talking about the Hamburglar from the old Burger King commercials.
Holy crap, Daryl, stop showing your age so much. Plus, first, I think that's McDonald's, which I'm not a fan of. And second, I bet half of our listeners don't even know who the Hamburglar is. I mean, heck, I barely remember him, and I'm only a few days younger than you.
Yeah, but think about this stuff. How great would it be? No, seriously, how great would it be if we spent a whole podcast talking about things like double cheeseburgers or double cheeseburgers with extra pickles? Oh my gosh, that'd be like so heavenly.
You do have a point. But seriously, no. As wonderful as that sounds, we are not talking about hamburgers or cheeseburgers. We're talking about nature's version of the masked bandit, our often very friendly and furry friend, the raccoon.
All right, but please, please tell me we can talk about how much raccoons love hamburgers then.
We can probably touch on that later.
Okay, so yes, folks, we are going to be talking about raccoons today. That's Procyon lotor, that's the scientific name for them, which I imagine most people are very familiar with raccoons and what they look like and what they do, but hopefully today we're going to take a deep dive into that raccoon world. And hopefully teach you something new.
Yeah, and let's actually start off with that name. You mentioned the scientific name, Procyon lotor. So that genus is actually unique to raccoons. The only other two species in the genus Procyon are a couple of raccoon species found in Central and South America. Now, having said that, there are some fairly close cousins of the raccoon that can appear in the southern parts of North America, namely the ringtail and the Codamundi. But those are actually a different genus than Procyon. The ringtails are in the genus Bassariscus, and the codies in the genus Nasua. But that's getting a little too down in the weeds.
I am so glad you recognize that because I was just about to throw you a life preserver.
Well, I'm glad that you think a life preserver will save me from weeds, but I digress. And I'm not done with the Latin part yet. So, we said raccoon is Procyon lotor. Do you happen to recall your high school Latin so you can tell me what loader means?
Well, believe it or not, I did take Latin in my high school days, way back in the like 1920s, at that all boy Catholic high school I went to, but literally, I have no recollection whatsoever of anything I learned from that Latin class.
Yet you remember the Hamburglar.
Hush now.
So the name Loder is actually quite fitting because it means washerman. In fact, many of the Native American terms for raccoons often refer to their washing behavior, as in, how they wash their food.
Interesting. But here's something. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't our buddy Carl Linnaeus, he is the gentleman who more or less developed this whole scientific naming of animals using that binomial nomenclature, the genus and species. And if I'm not mistaken, I originally think that Linnaeus felt that raccoons were more closely related to bears.
That is correct. Linnaeus originally classified them as Ursus cauda elongata, which translates to long-tailed bear. But then he had a rethinking and he classified them to Ursus lotor or washer bear. And it wasn't until like 50 years later that scientists decided to put them into their very own genus, since they're not really as close to bears as originally thought.
Well, would you believe it that there's a ton of people that stigma still persists? I still hear old timers, and I'm namely talking about my dad when I say old timers, but he's always telling me how raccoons more or less belong in the same family as bears. But there's even other folks, and I've heard it many a times where they think that raccoons are more closely related to dogs. But the fact of the matter is, they are in their own special category, Procyon. So, all right, now that we have this interesting naming detail out of the way, Steph, since you are so good at it, can you give us a brief but very concise species description?
Well, no guarantee on the brief, but sure. So raccoons are the largest of the procyonids, weighing in anywhere from 11 to like 55-ish pounds. And the body length is generally around 16 to 28 inches. At the shoulder, they're usually around 9 to 12 inches tall. I got to tell you though, the largest wild raccoon on record weighed like 62 pounds, which is pretty stinking big. Anyway, back to physical stuff. Raccoons, they have mostly gray, sort of grizzled coat, but the distinctive features are the mask, or the black mark surrounded by white around their eyes and on their face. They have rings around their tail and extraordinarily dexterous front paws, or hands, if you will. That dexterity in their hands is pretty often talked about. So it really makes me wonder if these little buggers had like opposable thumbs, like no door would ever stand a chance.
Dang, you are so damn good at that. Oh, bleep. Hey, do me a favor. Make sure you tell your mom that I use damn as in like DAM, the thing that holds back water.
I'm not really sure she's gonna buy that, but I'll let her know. Anyway, D, what really I really really enjoyed about this episode already was where the research actually led me. After our episode on animal intelligence and considering how raccoons are usually seen as these curious little like mischief makers, I really just thought I'd do a little bit of research and see what I could find on intellectual acuity.
And what did you happen to find?
I found some great reading for sure. I know you like talking about how smart bears and dogs are, but I tell you what, I think raccoons may swoop in and steal the prize on this one. I ended up reading on everything from like sort of these standardized tests all the way through to neuron counts in the cerebral cortex. And I tell you, I am impressed.
Well, I will let you in on a little secret here, Steph. Believe it or not, I actually read everything you sent me, so I'm not sure you could actually believe that, so.
No, I mean, no, for real, I really can't.
Hey, hush now, woman. Anyway, since that reading was so interesting, I'm actually afraid, and do I even want to hear what you found most remarkable?
Probably not, at least not related to neuron counts. The raccoon took your bears down and didn't even break a sweat.
I know, but like I said, I did read the homework that you set out for me.
Oh, okay. Well, good. So let's talk about some of that. I think our listeners would, really love to hear this because raccoons are notorious for getting into like everything, And I think a lot of the research really spotlights that inherent curiosity, the dexterity, and maybe even a bit of legit smarts.
Okay, that sounds good, my bear hating friend. But I tell you what,
Wait, no, not fair. I love bears.
I know you do. I'm just teasing. But moving on from that, what you gave us to read, I found that Davis study. That's the one that was from 1907.
I recall.
I found that one absolutely, truly interesting. And here's what I'm hoping to do. You tell me what you thought were some of the key points of that study, and then I'll tell you what I thought was pretty awesome from that same study.
Okay, as long as you come up with something different, because if I tell you what I thought and then you're like, oh, exactly, ditto that, I'm gonna be like, dude, you did not read this.
Know I'm gonna do that
Well, okay. Anyway, so that one, it was like 44 pages. And my first thought, I'll admit, it was like that journal article totally would not have passed muster for even a student paper at my university. Way too long, way too much fluff. But man, it was a fun read with all that fluff. And I think actually though, I was less impressed by his experiments and more enthralled with his casual observations. He talked about raccoon curiosity, sure, but I admit, I liked hearing how greedy the little buggers are. Great visuals. I think my favorite thing though was where Davis where he was speculating on how raccoons seem to have some grasp of cause and effect. You know, it was anecdotal, really, but at one point he talked about how a raccoon, she jumped from the side of the cage out to then grasp and swing on a trapeze. And then after a bit, when she fell and apparently it didn't feel so good, she got up and literally tried to take her anger out on that trapeze. And then, you know, he made several other anecdotal observations similar to that, like a raccoon that accidentally pinched his finger with a certain latch type, and from there on, he used his nose on that type of latch.
You're not going to believe this, but ditto. No, I'm teasing. Here it is, Steph. I love the fact that in this study, he put these raccoons through this amazing gauntlet of all these different experiments. So he was giving them these different latches and knobs and all this puzzle solving experimentation. And so these critters were just trying to figure out how to undo all that stuff. So here's what I love. Towards the end of his study, what was it? It was like six of his raccoons made a daring escape from the lab from like the third floor. How freaking cool is that? Anyway, the main thing that was going through my mind when I was reading all that was the Shawshank Redemption, where the inmates there kind of became friends with the warden, or in this case, the raccoons became friends with Davis here. All the while, as he's teaching them all this stuff, they're planning their great escape. So. Anyway, the best part was he literally taught them how to escape.
Totally like little Mission Impossible music going on in the
Don't,
background,
don't,
but.
don't, 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 don't. Okay.
Anyway, so yeah, true. And you know, and that's often cited as a reason why raccoons make such hard to keep animals, you know, including for any kind of testing, because they're little escape artists. But okay, well, since you read all the homework I said, what's next? You know what? How about the one that talks about city raccoons being smarter than country raccoons? What's your thoughts on that one?
Oh, I could tell you all my thoughts on that one, but all my country bumpkin friends would disown me because literally what that study said was pretty much city folks tend to be smarter than country folks. And truth be told, it kind of makes a lot of sense. And I know people are going to be upset at that, but think about it. Critters that live in an urban environment, they are literally running that gauntlet, just like in all those scientific experiments where he was testing them with all these different things. That's what these critters have to do every day, just trying to survive. When you look at what is going on in their life, they're dealing with dodging cars or getting in and out of cars or trying to get over or under fences. They're also trying to tackle like, oh, how do I get into this garbage can or how do I get out of this garbage can? They're also avoiding they're also avoiding pets and people all the time. It's like, holy cow, these animals they've got to think fast in order to survive that urban environment. Now them country raccoons, what they wake up, they raid a nest here or there, maybe catch a few crawdads, eat a couple ears of corn. They're pretty much on easy street.
I can see it, and you know, it seems logical. I mean, you actually literally just explained why I live in the country. But anyway, yeah, animals that have those more human constructed and human provided challenges to overcome to get what they want are bound to have to flex different muscles than those living the traditional wildlife, you know, with the whole using their brain more. So, you know, it wasn't science, but it did seem plausible. So let's talk about my arme secret.
Your what?
I did roasted.
Okay, Caddyshack.
Anyway, sorry, it's Canadian, so I figured
Wait,
you'd know.
wait,
I'm being
wait, wait,
fluent.
wait. That wasn't not Caddyshack. Who? Oh, B-52s. Why did I say
I
Caddyshack?
have no idea because you have the chucks on the brain.
sorry. All right, go ahead.
Anyway, I figured because it's Canadian that you know, since you're always telling us how fluent you are in Canadian.
I am, but let me guess to figure out what you just said. I imagine. Say it again, real quick.
Armée secrète.
All right, I'm gonna flat out guess here, and this is truly a guess, that you're armed with some kind of secret knowledge that will probably destroy me or something. Hey, wait, you're not bringing up the bare neuron thing again,
Oh,
are
yeah.
you? Oh, great. Go ahead, lay it on me, but be gentle.
Oh, no promises. So anyway, to catch our listeners up, there's a researcher out of the Vanderbilt, who out of, I shouldn't say the Vanderbilt. I can't remember if it was Vanderbilt Hospital or Vanderbilt
Yeah,
University. Either
it's not the big Vanderbilt mansion in North Carolina. So
that's the Biltmore.
Oh,
Anyway,
that's
I think it's from Vanderbilt University, but anyway, so they started looking at neuron counts in the cerebral cortex in an effort to understand how these correlate to intellect. Homo sapiens, or humans, as example, we have a whopping 16 billion neurons in the average cerebral cortex, which is a pretty stellar achievement because of all of the biological or the metabolic considerations that generally define how big brains will get, and then how expensive neurons, especially cerebral cortex neurons, how expensive those are to grow.
okay, so what it sounds like to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the more neurons that you have, I imagine like the more cognitive ability of one's brain. Is that right?
Fairly close.
Okay, well, lay it on me then. What are the rankings of some of our favorite animals? If I recall that study correctly, they looked at quite a few of our carnivorous friends.
They did, and it was absolutely astounding. But so let me start by saying there's a general rule of scaling that we need to remember. And I'm really going to just gloss over some of the geekier bits if that's okay with you.
Okay.
Okay, so well, carnivorans, which is the classification that they use for this, they stand out in the usual relationships. Well, let me try this again. So they stand out, and I'm going to try to be really clear about this. Tell me if I just totally muck it up. They stand out in that the usual relationship between larger body, larger cortical mass, and larger number of cortical neurons only applies to small and medium-sized species and not beyond dogs.
No. Your geek meter is going crazy. But and hold on, just wait a minute. Just so you know, bears rule and woodchucks drool.
Really, Carol?
Hey, remember, you can always count on me to ungeek things when you get too geeky here. But luckily, my coolness is here to prevail. So now, here's the thing, Steph. We really don't want to embarrass any of those other animals by comparing them to bears. So why don't we just go ahead and leave that comparison out of this discussion? So just tell me how poorly the cats did.
Okay, no. Okay, well, before we get to the grand results, so what they found was really sort of unexpected, but really large carnivorans, and I think the study went over hyenas, lions, and brown bears. They all have fewer neurons in their cortices than the golden retriever that they had, which was the next smallest in overall size and brain size. But the super amazing thing was how many neurons the raccoon had. I mean, obviously, of that group, the brown bear had the largest brain, but it seems that the neurons in bears are also big. So, bigger animal, bigger brain, bigger neuron. So not as many. Whereas with the retriever, the golden retriever, and then the smaller brains that they tested, they didn't fit that usual scalability. The neuron size was, I mean, for lack of a better way of phrasing it, I'll say it was sort of stable, and thereby, more neurons could fit into less area.
So can I defend my bears really quickly?
No.
Well, thank you. So with the bears, just remember, bears, they sometimes hibernate for up to like 6 months out of the year. So if throughout their life they're sleeping half the time, they're only awake using their brains for 6 months out of the year, I would say we just have to take whatever we find and multiply it by two.
Wait, what? How is that logical? I haven't even gotten to the results, really, and you're trying to defend the biology and morphology of the bear. I thought this was wildlife for you and not just bears for you, Gundard.
So, well, I'm sorry, but you may continue. I'm just, to be honest with you, Steph, I'm just thrilled we're not talking about woodchucks.
Oh. Well, I will put in a request to have woodchucks evaluated. Now, what the heck was I even saying?
Like I said, just continue. We got to wrap this up sometime today.
Okay, all right. So, should I just jump to the results then?
Yes, please reveal the winners and I shall hush.
Oh, okay. Cats with brains that are always smaller than those of dogs have, as expected, fewer neurons in the cerebral cortex. Researchers, they found around 250 million neurons in the cat. And it's a pretty meager number when you compare it to the 430 million neurons used in, like, that they found in the small dog. And, they found in the larger dog 620 million neurons in that golden retriever. So the cat really didn't rack up too well.
Well, we all knew that anyway, but what about raccoons? We forgot about raccoons. The show is about raccoons.
Raccoons, bears, cats, dogs. Anyway, so raccoons, which they have a darn near cat-sized brain, really. I mean, it was very, very similar in overall size, but they rang in with like dog-like numbers, to the tune of 400 million. So they were actually, and that's incredible, but anyway, that was actually one of the two big surprises in the study.
I feel like you're baiting me here because there's another big surprise and I'm not sure I want to hear
Yeah, well, since you asked, going in
didn't, but
the op, let's pretend you asked. You said, what's the big surprise? Anyway, so going in the opposite direction is the brain of the brown bear. It was the largest brain that they examined, and it was like, I mean, it was like 10 times the size of the cat or the raccoon brain, but it actually had far fewer neurons than expected. It only had about 250 million neurons in the cerebral cortex, like the cat, and almost 50% fewer cortical neurons than the raccoon. But I really do feel like I need to add a disclaimer here.
Yeah, multiply by two. You got to multiply by two, that hibernation thing.
No. That's not the disclaimer. So the disclaimer is that, while the science is solid, neuron counts, they're not a one for one on intelligence. We have nothing that indicates that that is a true statement. They're another indicator. So the more I've thought about it since our last episode on animal intelligence, the more I really think that intelligence is a very multifaceted concept. So, the neuron counts, just another tool in the toolbox. So, bears and cats and the men or women who love them shouldn't have their feelings hurt.
Yeah. And anyway, I knew there had to be something weird about those results. So anyway, all right, folks, we really hope we didn't get too nerdy here, but it goes to show how one can get completely lost in research when you begin to dig into topics that inspire you.
Agreed. Yeah, I so enjoyed letting my mind wander the last day or two on the brains of our, or, one of our favorite critters. And hands down, raccoons are some pretty clever critters. The anecdotal information, the rudimentary intellect tests from the last century, and even the in-depth neuron counts, they all point to the Procyon lotor being one really crafty animal.
Yes, they truly are. So we are going to have to start wrapping this up here in just a second. But I'm just sitting here and it dawned on me, I really haven't done any tangents. So
Oh, let it sit back.
I'm gonna
All right, go
no,
ahead.
well you gotta participate here because when you think of raccoons, what comes to mind with raccoons?
Rabies.
Rabies or babies?
No, rabies. Like the one thing that everybody thinks of when they think of raccoons is the one thing we didn't mention at all because we were trying to avoid it.
Yes. And rabies is a big thing. That could be your thing. One of the things that I always think about, and it comes from a childhood memory, because I remember going camping when I was a really young little boy. We'd be camping out at Allegheny State Park in Western New York. But I remember we would be sitting around the campfire, and before long, you'd have a couple raccoons come into camp, and it was customary that you would take a cracker or whatever you were eating, and you would feed it to the raccoons. So feeding raccoons is th that's probably why they're so beloved. They're like these cute critters that everyone loves to feed. But feeding raccoons is not a good thing. And where I'm going, and I go there all the time, is so many people will put out food for animals. And raccoons, we just talked about how incredibly intelligent they are. When they know where to get food, they're going to keep coming back, and they're going to find ways to get at whatever food you put out for them. And sometimes we artificially inflate their numbers. And raccoons are great animals, but too many raccoons can hurt other animals. We talked about their diet. They're going to eat anything and everything. They'll eat eggs and small critters. And so with everything we do, Steph, there's a balance. And trying to not upset that balance by either taking too many or in this case, feeding them and creating too many raccoons. That's one thing that always comes to mind is people love feeding raccoons. And you know me, I don't like the whole feeding wildlife thing. I
And
want wildlife to be wild.
but so in all of that all feels like intentional feeding. So what about the people who put out corn? Just because I want to poke you right there, because I know you didn't mention that one
No, that's
specifically,
a
and
good.
that's yeah.
Yeah, that's a huge poke, and that's probably one of my bigger beefs is people will put out corn to feed deer, and they for some reason, they've been duped by all these magazines and TV shows that kind of teach people, oh, you got to feed wild animals. No, you don't have to do that. So when they're putting out corn for deer, they're creating this place that becomes this giant feeding trough for raccoons and a whole bunch of other animals. Obviously, deer like it. But then you artificially increase the number of raccoons there. And then those raccoons devastate the ground nesting birds, whether or not it's quail or turkey or any other bird that nests on the ground. They don't stand a chance when there's a high population of raccoons. And so people just don't understand. And again, the focus of our show is your knowledge means their existence. And so trying to teach you to do the right things with wildlife is just that's what we're here to instruct people on. So
Yeah.
sorry, that
And
was my
I,
tangent.
nope, that's okay. And I think a lot of times people don't think about, they think about what they're doing as in the context of what they want. So they think, I am
Right.
putting out corn to feed deer. So they don't think about the cascading effect that one action has on the entire ecology of the area.
Yes, and that's what I always tell people. Like if I was a deer biologist, I can tell you what to do good things for deer. But I always tell everyone I'm a wildlife biologist. I'm trying to do good things for all wildlife. And so
Yep.
that's why I'm usually against the supplemental feed. So, all right, we really should wrap up because we're probably getting to that witching hour. But before we wrap up, I do want to answer a question from one of our followers. And actually, it's a pretty good question because, believe it or not, I know it's on the minds of hundreds of our listeners.
Hundreds.
Okay, it's on the minds of both of our listeners. So the question I want to answer was it was actually asked to me in an instant message by Jake Whiteside. And he sent me an instant message just a couple of days ago and said, I really, really like raccoons, and I was wondering if it would be possible if I could get one as a pet. So Steph, do you want to answer that one or shall I?
Go right ahead, sir.
Okay. Well, Jake, I know it's something you really want to do, but I'm just trying to tell you from a professional standpoint, it's probably not a good idea, and it's not a good idea for a couple of reasons. Now, first off, depending on what state you live in, it could very well be illegal. There's lots of regulations about having native wildlife as pets, but some states may allow it. I don't know the regulations in all the states.
Hello? Hello?
No, that's my dad's phone. He's got everything jacked up. Ugh. All
That's
right, I'm
okay.
gonna stop
Carry
with
on.
that.
No, that's okay. Just carry on. So you were telling Jake, if it wasn't for, if it wasn't for the states all having different rules, you'd be able to cite exactly.
Did I tell you I was living with George Costanza's parents?
You did.
My dad has the TV, everything turned up to the highest volume possible. And so it's like I'm afraid to open a door because alarms are going to go off and bells and pictures taken. So you've now entered into the personal life of Daryl right now. All right, so
Anyway.
Jake, probably not a good idea. Now, first thing you do, check in to make sure the legality of it, because not all states will allow that. But even if it was legal, you have to understand raccoons are not domesticated animals, and preventing one from living a life in the wild, you're really not doing that animal any favors. A lot of animals, we did a show where animals can really get stressed. Now, I know a lot of animals will adapt to a life in captivity, but is that a really good life for them? Would they rather be someone's pet, or would they rather be running out there free and wild?
Maybe we should ask all of those raccoons that staged the escapes for everything.
Yeah, because they had it good. They were getting rewarded, and they still planned like an escape from a three-story building. So anyway, you have to understand raccoons can be really hard to care for, given they are nature's escape artists. And as fun and as cool as it sounds, I personally just would not recommend trying to get one as a pet. But here's the thing, Jake. You'll have to make that decision on your own. And just like I said, make sure it's permissible within your state if you do go in that direction.
Oh, and I also do need to give one shout out, and it's actually like more like a citation. Huge, huge props and thanks to Deborah Jardine Messiter, who's the one leading that charge in the neuron research, which she's conducting under Susanna Herculano Housel. So that research, all of that research I was talking about with all the neuron counts, if you're just a geek like me and you want to do it, the research can be found in the journal Frontiers in Neuroanatomy.
Very well done. You knocked it out of the park with not only your Latin pronunciations, but the pronunciation of those researchers. So you did well. Anyway, since we're about out of time, I'd like to remind everyone who enjoys this podcast that tell your family and friends about this. Spread the word, spread the joy. And I don't know why I'm saying with an SH, spread everything. So anyway, everyone knows you can follow us on the web at www.wildlifeview.com, but the best place, this is why I have you do all the intros and all the ending stuff, is because I get so tongue-tied so easily, the words just flow out of you. But
Anyway, sorry about
do you want to
that.
finish it?
Nope, sorry, carry on.
The best place to follow us, folks, is on Facebook, otherwise known as the Book of Faces, according to Steph. So, anyway, just look up Wildlife for You on Facebook and like our page. You can also do the same thing on Twitter as well. But lastly, we really can't thank you enough for listening to the podcast here, because after all, when it comes to wildlife,
Your knowledge often means their existence. So, have a good night, folks.
oh, this was a tough one.